Yesterday, we remembered, as a nation, as a state, as individuals, the 9/11 attacks that occurred 10 years ago. There were memorial services honoring those who died in the planes and in the buildings targeted in the attacks. We memorialized the police and firefighters and other first responders who lost their lives trying to save others. We read names and rang bells for others who died on that day, and those who died in the wars that ensued following the attacks. We thank those who provided services at a time of great need. We remembered the terror and the shock that we experienced on that day watching planes fly into the Twin Towers and watching them collapse. We remembered where we were and what we did and when we first learned the news. Some of us lost loved ones in those attacks, and all of us in Wisconsin mourned the loss of life and the loss of a sense of security. We are going to talk about the psychological impact of the 9/11 attacks, then and now. And we will welcome your reactions to what you felt then and what you feel now, watching and hearing and reading about the 9/11 10-year anniversary. Have we healed? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, September the 12th. How are you feeling about the 10-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or contact us via Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sean Cahill. He's an associate professor of psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He studies psychological reactions to stress and trauma, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, there's a lot to talk about. I'm wondering now, though, after a lot of us watched a lot of this coverage yesterday, and it might have brought back some memories. I'm wondering, what is the good of doing this, of having day-long memorials for an event like this?
Boy, that's a big question to start with. Obviously, I think the potential good of this is it's an opportunity for our country to find some common cause to get behind and, find... Especially these days where there's so much division, to find something that we can all sort of rally behind and sort of see each other as, you know, fellow Americans.
Mm-hmm. Did we do that with the events yesterday?
I don't know. I think it'll probably be time we'll have to sort of tell on that. And, of course, the other thing is it'd be sort of difficult to even know. I don't know that there's anyone out there specifically, maybe the Pew Research Group or something like that, that might be monitoring sort of public attitudes at large. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out.
Well, certainly with your expertise, does it do any harm to us if we are watching those towers fall down time and time again during, the services we watched yesterday?
Right. I think that for most people watching, seeing the reruns of the planes hitting the towers and attending these memorial services aren't going to do any harm. But we also sort of have to differentiate between most people versus some people who might be more vulnerable to these kinds of things. So, there was some early research within the first year after 9/11 that suggested that people who attended memorials and such like that were having actually higher levels of like post-traumatic stress symptomology compared to people who didn't attend a lot of memorials. The question, however, is we can't sort of figure out cause and effect in a simple descriptive study like that. Is it that people are going to these memorials because they're hurting so much and this is their way of coping with it, or is going to these memorials just sort of digging at a wound and sort of making people feel worse? It's really hard to figure out cause and effect under those circumstances.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the long-term psychological impact of the 9/11 attacks and how it affected different groups of people differently.
Sure. So there is actually pretty amazing that within about 6 weeks after 9/11, there were groups of researchers who were able to mobilize and start looking into the impact of the events of 9/11, and they were able to do it to sort of repeat evaluations, you know, several times over the subsequent year. And one of the really sort of, I guess, interesting things from my perspective was that in some respects we didn't learn much new at all, that all the things that we learned out of this research that came after 9/11 was consistent with much of what we knew about traumatic reactions following other kinds of trauma. So, for example, most people, if they experienced any significant symptoms in the immediate aftermath, most of them showed relatively rapid recovery, meaning the symptoms diminished without any kind of professional intervention within the next 1 to 3 months. People who were most directly affected by these events, so, for example, people with family members who had died or people who had worked or lived around Ground Zero, were much more affected than people who either were geographically much more distant or didn't have the psychological connection of having a loved one involved.
Mm-hmm.
People who had pre-existing mental illnesses were more vulnerable, or if they had a family history of mental illnesses, they were more vulnerable to having strong reactions to 9/11. And there was some concern in the immediate aftermath of 9/11 that there was going to be this pandemic of post-traumatic stress disorder throughout the entire country. And I even over this weekend, I heard people making reference to this idea. But all of the epidemiological research that was conducted after 9/11 suggested, in fact, that when it came to measurable psychological difficulties, the vast majority of the country coped with this event reasonably well.
Mm-hmm. What about just general anxiety of the potential of another terrorist attack, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there certainly you know, was elevated concern about the possibility of another attack. And I'm not certain of any research that's followed this. Again, I suspect like the Pew Research Group might have information on this. But over time, I'm sure for most people, that sense of heightened alertness and sort of concern about the next terrorist attack has diminished. I mean, in some respects, you know, the country has witnessed several attempted attacks. There was the anthrax that immediately followed 9/11. There was the shoe bomber and the underwear bomber and a few others that I can think of. And, you know, for the most part, these things happened. The locality where it happened in kind of coped with it and moved on.
So this tells me that we're a pretty resilient group.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's sort of the good news that that I think it's underplayed here, is that humans' reaction in the face of trauma, for the most part, is one of coping and resilience. There's a subgroup of people who develop long-term psychological problems following a particular traumatic event, but most people will have a temporary period of disruption in their functioning and their lives, but will gradually sort of return to normal or, you know, adequate functioning.
Yeah. I was looking at a poll that did come out from CNN was involved in this poll, and it seems to be a little bit of mixed reaction here, but it says that the sadness and anger that Americans felt after the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001 have not gone away over the past decade. Yet, on the other hand, most of us don't think there is you know, any reason to be afraid of terrorism.
Yeah. That's sort of an interesting finding, and every once in a while you do find, you know, depending on how you phrase a question, it can substantially sort of affect the way people respond to it. Some ways of wording a question may have a tendency to pull for one kind of response relative to another. So it's interesting that in the same poll they would actually have those kinds of internal inconsistencies.
Yeah. The in part of it was that the 9/11 is fading, though, from our memories. It used to be shortly after the attacks, two-thirds of us said that we thought about them at least once a week. And now more than one-third say we hardly ever think about it at all.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me. Again, I think that's similar to what I was describing about traumatic reactions, that you know, shortly after a traumatic event, the enormity of the event and the significance of the event sort of weighs very heavily on our minds. But over time, if you know, there isn't sort of as life moves on and things replace, you know, the traumatic event, in this case 9/11, you know, other things happen, demand our attention, and life pretty much moves back to normal. And I think, obviously, that's one of the concerns people sometimes will have after these kinds of tragic events, is that we not get back to normal too quickly, you know, sort of that we should always remember and learn the lessons of these events.
What determines, Professor Cahill, if someone is going to develop PTSD after a trauma like this,
sure,
or whether they bounce back and are resilient, or whether they just have a low level, you know, anxiety? What is it that makes one person respond differently?
Sure. So, you know, we can kind of break down the factors that might contribute to the development of post-trauma reactions into things that are related to the nature of the traumatic event itself, and then the person's sort of background or history, and then the person's immediate reactions to the event. So in terms of the features of the traumatic event, so when we look at something large like 9/11, physical geography was one of the biggest predictors. People who lived and or worked south of Canal Street on Manhattan were much more likely to develop PTSD, mm-hmm, even compared to people, say, in the outer boroughs of New York, like Brooklyn or the Bronx.
So just being close to it, which is somewhat understandable.
Yeah. Exactly, mm-hmm, exactly. Then there is the issue of psychological connection. So even if, you know, you were living in Long Island or in North Dakota or in wherever, if you had a family member who had been killed or who had been at least at risk on that day, you're more vulnerable than someone who had no psychological connection to the event.
Hmm.
Obviously, for people who are involved in the event, people who are injured are going to be much more likely to develop post-traumatic stress symptoms than someone who got out safely. If you witnessed, you know, things like you saw dead bodies and things like that, compared to not actually directly seeing those things, those would all contribute to increased likelihood.
Mm-hmm. First responders?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But is there anything, I mean, that's all very helpful, but let's say that, you know, you witnessed this close to the World Trade Center collapsing.
Right.
One person develops post-traumatic stress disorder and the other does not.
Right, right. So what we're talking about is sort of the nature of the trauma, mm-hmm, which is something we don't have control over. Then there's sort of two other features to it. There's another feature that we don't have a lot of control over, and that's sort of our own history that we bring to the situation. So some people are going to come to this situation. They could be in the same room and witness the same thing. One person is affected and one is not. And part of that might be accounted for by things like a personal history with prior trauma. So having been exposed to multiple prior traumas would make you potentially more vulnerable than not having been exposed to that. Or having a family history of mental illness might make you more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the issue of how we sort of react to the event itself. People who have the strongest reactions immediately afterwards are at somewhat higher risk for developing PTSD. And one particular reaction that we think contributes a lot to who develops long-term post-traumatic problems versus people who recover is who gets caught up in a cycle of avoidance. So people who are so shooken by this event that they withdraw from life and start avoiding routine things, or things that may not be routine but are safe, but it just sort of makes them feel uncomfortable, perhaps reminds them of the traumatic event, they withdraw from those things, those people are much more vulnerable to developing long-term emotional reactions to the event.
We are talking about the psychological aftermath of 9/11. We're talking with Sean Cahill, Associate Professor of Psychology at UW-Milwaukee, who studies psychological reactions to stress and trauma. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions about the 10-year anniversary of the September 11th attacks. Lots of coverage, media coverage on the anniversary yesterday and in the weeks leading up to the date as well. And we're wondering how you felt then and how you feel now. Do you feel as though you have turned the corner, or have you healed from the psychological impact of those attacks on September 11th, 2001? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up during At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 this afternoon, it's back to school again for children and teachers. And Ben and his guests will talk about the issues and challenges facing teachers and administrators and children on this new school year. Well, that's after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We are talking about 9/11 and the psychological impact of 9/11, any long-term psychological impacts of the day, whether the intense media coverage of the anniversary has been helpful to us or harmful in any way. And we're welcoming your reactions. What was your reaction then, and what is it now? Have you turned the corner? Have we healed? Do you know someone who hasn't? Or has been deeply affected by 9/11. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Linda in Brookfield is with us first. Hello, Linda.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I was actually present two blocks from the World Trade Center on 9/11, as I at that point lived and worked in New York City.
Oh boy.
And it was a very traumatic day. And I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder immediately following. I sought therapy. And many of the people I worked with were as well. And a few interesting things about what you were speaking about was, one, that the varying levels of people and how they experienced it, where once we all came back to work, I had staff that literally, as we started talking about our experience, just randomly throughout the day, which is what would happen at that point, they would literally just drop there and leave and literally walked out of their employment because they could no longer handle the experience. I had another staff member who was never able to come back to work, and another one who came back for a few weeks after and then all of a sudden stopped showing up. And I had to, you know, track her husband down and find out where she was and ensure she was safe, and she had to find employment elsewhere. And I've done very well since then. I've healed, you know, very well. But then just recently in the last couple of weeks, when all the media coverage started again, it happened very unexpectedly, where I was reading an article about 2.5 weeks ago, and all of a sudden my hands started shaking. I didn't even know it, and I realized it was kind of coming back to me. So what I've done the last few weeks is avoided it. And yesterday I just went out into the country and made sure it was nowhere near TVs or the radio, because it's impossible to get away from it right now. And it can be a little bit overwhelming. So I'm looking forward to maybe this week even being over, so I don't have to think about it quite as much.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm glad you shared your story with us, Linda, about this. So you are. The media coverage has hurt you a little bit.
Very much so. And I was very surprised by that because, you know, over 10 years I've had a completely matured life, and obviously I've grown so much in that 10 years, and I was very surprised by how it came back to me. And I immediately sought out a dear friend of mine who lost her niece that day and to make sure she was doing okay. And she said she was having the same issues.
Wow. Well, hold on if you will, Linda. Professor
sure.
Cahill?
Yeah, Linda, thank you for sharing that with us. And, you know, you raise a really, I think, a good sort of issue, and that is even in people who show sort of this typical pattern of recovery that I talked about, that doesn't mean that they'll never experience strong reactions. It's that the reactions are less frequent and less disruptive. But something like an anniversary, and a major anniversary like, you know, the 10th anniversary, And the increased media coverage that this year had compared to, say, last year or the year before, certainly can trigger at least temporary reactions in people who otherwise were showing, you know, really good functioning in the years subsequent to the event.
Yeah.
And sort of knowing those things can sort of prepare you. So for example, you know that you've learned from this that you're still potentially vulnerable to these kinds of anniversary reactions. So next year, you know, in the weeks leading up to 9/11, you can perhaps plan for how to make sure that you're getting the social support that might be helpful to in getting through it, minimizing your exposure to, unnecessary news coverage of the event, and just sort of, you know, making those kinds of decisions to sort of minimize these anniversary reactions.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear you speak about the core reasons that people have different levels of post-traumatic stress disorder affect them. And in fact, one thing that I had experienced in my post-event therapy was that I had tremendous survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the therapist explored is why that was.
Yeah.
Because people who had much worse experiences than I do are experiences that would more likely create different survivor's guilt. But for reasons based upon my family experience, I had it much worse.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fascinating to see where you end up in terms of your responses to these events.
Right. And you know, another thing that you sort of, your comment there brings up is we oftentimes talk about in terms of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is one specific kind of reaction to traumatic events that's characterized by certain very specific symptoms. But PTSD is not the only reaction that people can have to these events. People can have other things like feeling guilty for having survived the event, or you can see depression rather than post-traumatic stress disorder. So there can be a range of reactions people can have to these events, and not all of them fall under the rubric of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Linda, do you mind if I ask what type of work you were involved in that all your coworkers also just couldn't continue?
Well, what happened was I was in the process of opening a hotel immediately on the tip of the island, which was two blocks south of the World Trade Center. So what happened was not only were they experiencing the effect of that day, but they were also experiencing what was it touched us very much, was the loss of the employees in the Windows of the World, because those were the same type of employees that we had.
I see.
So it touched us to the core. And we, almost everyone, at that point, New York, anyone that was in our business lost people they knew because of where we were located. And it was just an overwhelming experience that, you know, it was very hard to get over it in many different ways.
Well, Linda, we do, again, appreciate your sharing your story. And we won't be doing any more anniversary coverage after this hour. So, Professor Cahill, a little bit about that, the type of work that someone's involved in and how that might affect them?
Well, you know, so again, I think, you know, in this case, the physical proximity, mm-hmm. the kind of work, she described having sort of survivor guilt. There's certainly that sense of, you know, given the commonalities mm-hmm. between myself and other people who died, that could have been me. Why was it, you know, why was it sort of them instead of us?
And you mentioned that it would be important for her and anybody else in this boat to, you know, seek out your social network to help you through times like this. How important is that to someone?
Well, in fact, when we study sort of people's natural recovery to these events, meaning not people who have gone in to get professional help, but just sort of people who manage recovery on their own, social support seems to be the single biggest factor that helps to differentiate between people who recover and people who get stuck. So I think it's very important. There's two aspects of it. One is just, sort of getting social support, and then the other is getting support that feels supportive, right? So it's not just affiliating with other people. It's affiliating with other people that talk with you, comfort you, you know, interact with you in ways that you find comforting. So obviously there can be bad social support. In other words, people who are critical, people who, you know, it's like, come on, it's 10 years, get over this and that kind of stuff. Obviously that's not the kind of support that's helpful. So seeking out the kind of social contact that brings you comfort and helps you to feel safe and, you know, understood and that kind of stuff. That's sort of the important key.
Thanks, Linda. We are going now to Joachim in Saginaw, Michigan. Hello, Joachim. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. What is on your mind this morning?
Nothing. I just heard your radio. I was just leaving Wisconsin from Indian Summer there. I did was in a parade for 9/11. And I just heard what you guys were talking about and however I could respond to that.
Yes, and I'm sorry, you were involved in a 9/11 anniversary event in Michigan yesterday, is what you're saying?
No, actually, I was at your state, I was in Wisconsin down at Indian Summer. I was here, actually, in your part of your town.
I see. Okay, I'm sorry. So, were you involved with 9/11?
Yes, I was. I was one of the rescue workers that responded to a 9/11 that very next day. I was there the very next day I responded.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Okay, so
Joachim was a rescue worker who was involved in operations on 9/12.
Correct. Yes, I was.
Yes, and tell us about that. How did that affect you?
I think TV didn't do its justice. I mean, because you see it on TV, but once you got to ground zero, it just sucked the whole life right. And that dropped me right to my knees. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, you couldn't believe the destruction. I mean, you're dealing with a 16-acre radius of destruction, pile 40 feet off, full seven-story seat, which is twisted metal, and there was nothing recognizable. It was just all, I mean, you didn't see a desk, a chair. It was just pulverized concrete and twisted metal. That's it.
It must have been awful. But how did you feel any PTSD symptoms or how did you react to the trauma yourself?
I think when you think you're trained for everything. Like I said, I had a canine, and I just sat back and I just remember God saying, just trust your dog. I'll do the rest. That's what he told me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I made contact with incident command where canine was being dispatched out, and I started going to work. And it's like I said, you just people don't understand. You got the sight, the smell, the taste, the noises, whatever you could do is just doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, people can't see that and realize that what us workers went through. But you learn to cope with it. You know, if it's cops, you know, they suck it up. You know, deal with it. You know, you'll get through it. But you got to realize, you know, we are human beings too. You know, we do have feelings, we do have thoughts and stuff that, you know, we go through. And you know, I wrote a book because it was just released September 2nd, and Michigan and Rookie. It's about my ordeals as a police canine handler, and it touches a bit on 9/11 and how I cope with a lot of my feelings as a first responder. And I think, like I said, a lot of people don't know what us first responders go through on a daily basis. We're right in the thickest spin of everything. And to have to come home to our loved ones, man, they just assume that we're these guys that are tough, burly, you know, male and females that we're supposed to just brush it off. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of hurt that we bottle up. You know, we have the highest, you know, alcoholism rate, prescription drug, divorce, suicide. That falls in a lot of the first responders.
Joachim, do you feel as though you have healed? You have recovered from the trauma of that day?
You take day by day, one day at a time. You know, and it just, you know, I mean, and I, like I said, I turned to the Lord. You know, that's where I went. I went to God. I ran to God. I didn't run from God on a daily basis. You know, there's times where, you know, hey, you deal with stuff, and you know, sometimes you don't know who to talk to. And I think a lot of times, a lot of these first responders need to realize that, hey, you need to share stuff with your family. You need to share stuff with other friends and get that out. Get that stuff out. If you don't vent it, what's going to happen is it's going to, you're going to sooner or later explode. It's going to just, you know, overflow. It's like a cork shaking a bottle on top of it and just, that's what's going to happen. You're going to crash.
Well, Akeem, I want to thank you so much for your service and for calling in and for participating in the 9/11 anniversary event in Milwaukee as well. I'm Professor Cahill, on the last point that Joaquin brought up, how important is religion or spirituality in recovering from this kind of trauma?
Well, so I think part of it is it's going to depend a lot on the individual person. So individuals are going to enter these situations with a variety of different beliefs and sort of strength of commitment to a particular religious tradition. And so for some people, it's going to, I think, be very important. And for other people, it's going to be less important. It's one of those things. If it works for you, then certainly I want to encourage it. obviously, traumatic events are existential events. They sort of bring to mind our own mortality. And so particularly if people come to the situation with a particular set of religious beliefs, that can sort of amplify these things and it can be a source of comfort. On the other hand, if I wouldn't be concerned for a person just because they didn't make sense of things in spiritual terms, because that may simply reflect differences in who they were prior to the traumatic event. I do think, some of the things that Joaquin sort of mentioned, though, are there are a few other things that were really sort of very insightful. One has to do with, the nature of first responders.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of an interesting mixture of risk factors and resilience factors. So first responders, particularly in big metropolitan cities, are going to be seeing deaths and destruction on a regular basis. And we know that sort of the effect of traumatic events are cumulative. And so a person who's had multiple traumatic events is more vulnerable than someone who hasn't been through a lot of traumatic events. So in that regard, their job puts them in a situation with every year they potentially are becoming more and more vulnerable to the impact of the next horrible event. On the other hand, the people who choose to go into those professions and those professions tend to screen people to try and select for the more resilient people. And so they're coming into this situation with a hardiness that might be beyond what is normative for most people. And so you've got this weird mixture of risk factors and resilience factors that are going to be sort of playing themselves out in different ways. And then there's sort of the way people then choose to cope with things. And again, Joaquin sort of mentioned the prevalence of substance use and alcohol amongst first responders. And, those are things that in the short run might help somebody cope with the distress of a really bad day. But in the long run, it probably, contributes to worse and worse functioning. If every time you feel upset, instead of, seeking comfort in the support of friends, you go and get drunk, it can produce all kinds of long-term consequences that are even more stressful, but you don't sort of experience them until later on the road.
We are talking with Sean Cahill, Associate Professor of Psychology at UW-Madison, who studies psychological reactions to stress and trauma. And we are talking about the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, which occurred over the weekend. Lots of media coverage of then and now. And we're taking a look at the long-term psychological impact of the attacks and wondering if 9/11 changed you. Did you feel anxiety or depression as a result of the attacks? And have you turned the corner? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you know someone who was closer to the attacks than you or someone who was directly affected in one way or another? And how did they deal? How did you deal? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Curdine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you. And as it is every Monday after 9 o'clock, Kathleen and her guest will talk about all things political, all the top State and national political headlines of the past week or so. All things political coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about the psychological aftermath of 9/11 as we just marked the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks yesterday. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions and your reactions for our guest, Sean Cahill, Associate Professor of Psychology at UW-Madison. And our next caller is Patrick in West Bend. Hello, Patrick.
Hello. The thing that was most, I guess, noticeable to me after September 11th is that there was a hyper-patriotism that seemed to be on display. And it struck me at the time as, inappropriate or something that was more of a reaction, an emotional or a psychological reaction to the event. And, I didn't have that reaction myself, and I actually had the opposite. I was somewhat dismayed and a little bit alienated by what I thought was a very reflexive and very violent type of patriotism that a lot of people seemed to be drawn to after the event. And I was just hoping the guest could comment on that.
Mm-hmm. I hope so, too. Professor Cahill, can you?
I think back, and I know exactly what you're talking about, Patrick, that, certainly there was a moment of unity in this country that we probably hadn't seen in quite a while. And for some people, it led to, retribution and sort of wanting payback. And, I certainly remember in the months after 9/11, hearing a lot of stories about Arab Americans experiencing harassment and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, over the next couple of years, we had, the invasion of Afghanistan and the invasion of Iraq, and things started getting polarized again around this political issue. The psychology of politics is not my specialty, so I can't sort of comment, beyond just sort of, I think, a reasonably informed layperson at that point. But I certainly, I certainly recognize what Patrick is referring to. And, it's just one of those things where, unity can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing.
There was that sort of unity expressed in, as Patrick put it, patriotism. But there was also, I sensed, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I also sense a kindness and a compassion and a neighbor helping neighbor, stranger helping stranger kind of atmosphere for some time after the 9/11 attacks. And that kind of went away, too.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? These kinds of events can bring out both the best and the worst in us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes at the same time. So, one moment we're sort of helping a neighbor, and the next moment we're sort of looking with suspicion at someone,
right,
of Middle Eastern descent. I think, as with many of these things, as life continues on and, sort of the things that were happening before 9/11, we sort of resumed our lives and things like that. The kindness can also disappear. Sort of the perceived need to help each other gets more distant. I suppose one could discuss the extent the false patriotism that Patrick was kind of referring to, whether that actually has passed us or not. You can still certainly see some residual aspects of that, where at least with some individuals, still run into occasional negative attitudes sort of projected at Arab Americans.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the wars that ensued after 9/11, it seems to me that we have had a real spike in post-traumatic stress disorder with the veterans returning from those wars. What are we learning a lot about treating PTSD from 9/11 and the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Yeah, so one of the things that happened in the last, somewhere in the 5 or 6 years, The federal government sort of, I think, recognized the impact that these wars were having. Our best evidence is suggesting that somewhere in the neighborhood of 20% of our returning veterans are significantly impaired with either PTSD or depression. And so they started investing a lot of money in research on trauma-related, you know, sort of research related to veterans. And so there's a lot of research going on currently. Some of it is just descriptive, really trying to understand what are the risk and resilience factors for our military personnel. But also a lot of it is looking at applying psychological treatments and psychiatric or pharmacological treatments to ameliorating PTSD amongst veterans. So, you know, prior to these wars, we actually had a pretty well-developing research database showing that there were certain forms of therapy that fall under the rubric of cognitive behavior therapy that were showing that were developing a very good track record of being effective for many people with PTSD. So that's where a lot of our efforts have been going, is to verifying the effectiveness of these treatments within military populations. But there's also some sort of very innovative things that are happening now, for including things like providing treatment to people while they're still within the military service in the service zone, to see if we can actually prevent the development of long-term problems rather than waiting till they're back home and then dealing with the subsequent post-traumatic stress disorder. So, you know, I can't give you the answer to these questions because they're still ongoing, but we're in a position that probably 5 or 6 years from now we're going to have just an incredible wealth of data on many, many aspects of military service, PTSD, and treatment for PTSD within military personnel.
Well, that will be good to know.
Yeah.
But speaking of you know, PTSD and trauma and trying to prevent psychological problems like this, don't we already know whether or not it helps or not for therapists and psychological counselors to be dispatched as a part of first response?
So that's actually a pretty controversial issue.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons it's controversial is it's actually hard to demonstrate a preventative effect of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
As we've discussed, the normative response to traumatic events is for people to show recovery. And so any treatments that you have got to produce an effect that's larger than the original natural recovery response. And so we actually don't know very much about prevention, brief intervention immediately after trauma as a way of preventing long-term PTSD reactions. There's a little more than a handful of studies that have looked at this, suggesting that at least with some traumas, that a brief intervention, meaning about 4 or 5 therapy sessions, beginning somewhere 2 to 4 weeks after the traumatic event, can speed the rate of recovery. It doesn't seem to affect the endpoint. In other words, the same proportion of people, say 6 months later, are showing recovery. But the folks who get sort of this brief intervention achieve the recovery point more quickly.
Moving onto a slightly different but related area of the 9/11 anniversary and its impact on us then and now with all the coverage, we had an added stressor late last week. It was reported that there was a credible but unconfirmed report that there was going to be another terrorist attack on the 9/11 anniversary, and I'm wondering if that's got to add to our anxiety.
Yeah, it certainly has to. I guess probably that's part of the reason why the government took such, you know, sort of public actions and kind of locked down the city of New York and were trying to communicate that, you know, they were taking the steps that they thought were necessary to keep the country safe. And, of course, now we're all going to look back and say it must have worked. You know, of course, mm-hmm. we don't know if the terrorists would have been successful whether or not we took those extra safety steps. That's the one problem with when nothing happens, you don't know why nothing happened.
Right.
But yeah, it certainly can add to the level of sort of distress and anxiety. On the other hand, you know, we got through it. Nothing bad happened. Perhaps that can build our confidence that as a country, we can sort of manage these things.
Well, indeed. I saw some coverage that New Yorkers were ho-hum about the threat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that there was the Times Square bomber that failed. Mm-hmm. You know, in some respects, some of this is probably getting to be familiar to them. It's like, yeah, these things happen, and our first responders respond. And so far, you know, we've been spared anything, you know, nothing since the anthrax attacks right after 9/11 have happened in New York successfully, right?
Right.
There have been some things that have been averted.
We're coming to the end of the hour, and I guess trying to wrap up a little bit here. Have we psychologically turned the page to 9/11? Have we bounced back? Have we moved on?
I think probably for most of us we have. In some respects, the country is never going to be the same because of this. So there are going to be lingering effects. But obviously, if you think about that first 6 months after 9/11. I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and because of 9/11, we got involved in a project that had me going up to Manhattan once a month for quite a while to monitor some training we had done of therapists in how to treat PTSD. And I certainly, even over that period of time, was noticing sort of a return to normalcy, and that was still within the first year of 9/11. So I think 10 years out, for the most part, you know, we think about it from time to time. We might get a little emotional on anniversaries like yesterday. But I think for the most part, we've returned to sort of our daily life. We're dealing with the good and the bad of what's happening here and now. We certainly know that one of the areas where I think as a country we've kind of burnt out on is all the war. I mean, public opinion mm-hmm. has really sort of shifted from going after them, you know, no matter what it takes, to it's time to start winding down these wars, particularly in Iraq. I think all of those are potential signs that as a country we are moving beyond this.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Sean Cahill, Associate Professor of Psychology at UW-Milwaukee, who studies psychological reactions to stress and trauma, talking with us about yesterday's 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. Thanks very much for being with us. Thanks to Rob Farrett and to Bill Martins for producing this program. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, it's this week's edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be in, and he'll be sharing some money-saving tips, smart asset advice, and answers to your personal finance questions. Every Tuesday between 8 and 9, it's On Your Money with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and he'll be with us tomorrow. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen and her guests will be talking about all things political coming up after the news at 9 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.